Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I am someone that doesn't drink alcohol. I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same. Today, podcast, we've got a guest. His name is John. John is one of our ambassadors, our Truth About Alcohol ambassadors. So if you're ever fortunate enough to take the taster or the intensive experience, and John is one of the people who will guide you. John's 42 years old at the time of recording. He hails from the north of England in the UK, and he is someone a little bit like me who has always known deep down inside his gut that alcohol wasn't good for him. He tried several times to stop drinking over the years, and then in July 2018, he'd had enough. He came on to Strive, he posted his introduction, and that was the day after he had his last ever drink, and he hasn't touched a single drop since. John is a qualified counselor. He's also a father to a four-year-old girl called Betsy, who he wishes to be the best role model for. And John also wishes to help others to overcome challenges in their lives. And drinking alcohol doesn't aid any of these goals. Alcohol aids nothing, says John. Since quitting alcohol, John has set up his private counseling practice. He's developed a love of running and gained clarity and control of his life. And today, John gives back to the Strive community in his role as the Truth About Alcohol ambassador. And we love the absolute pants off him. So without further ado, I'll shut the hell up and leave you in the capable hands of John.
Okay.
Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast, live from this shitty little bedroom here in Los Angeles. I am going to be interviewing Truth About Alcohol Ambassador John today, although you might see Kim and you might see Craig and you might see some other people joining throughout the next hour. And that's cool. They're just checking in, learning from us live as we speak. And at the end, we're going to open it up to some Q&A. So Craig and Kim will be able to fire some questions at John. How's life, John?
Good, yeah. Yeah, really good. Excellent.
Thanks for doing this, mate. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, is it? Jumping on, I'm a bit like David Letterman these days, and it's a bit of a, it's a bit overwhelming for some people sometimes. So just take it easy, have a few deep breaths. And if you are confused watching this, I'm Lee, and the guy with no hair is John, because sometimes John tries to think that he's me and acts like me on a weekly basis when he takes the online group, but we are very different people, okay? So when I was a nipper, John, I didn't have much as a kid, And I remember one Christmas, I got a secondhand BMX and a black and white portable TV for Christmas. And I thought I was the absolute nuts, mate. I was watching Indiana Jones in my bedroom, with one of those aerials where you have to hold it like this, Thought it was fantastic. And it was the best Christmas I remember, right? When you was a nipper, what's the best Christmas that you remember, and Christmas present-wise?
Oh, it has to be Star Wars figures, the whole shebang, the AT-AT, the Millennium Falcon. We had everything, and then I remember, I think my parents told me that they sold it for about a few quid, like everything, and I think they're worth a fortune now. But I remember having it all working, and the AT-AT was walking in the living room, but it didn't work for that long. I remember it being conked out after a few days. But yeah, that was probably...
My daughter at the moment is actually reading Star Wars.
Yeah.
And my missus asked me yesterday, she said, was you into Star Wars? And I was like, well, I was, but I couldn't afford any of the figures. I just used to watch the movies on TV. Star Wars, right? So what was it you wanted to be when you were thinking about growing up when you was a kid?
I wanted to be a policeman, believe it or not. And I'm told that I look like a policeman by the kids at school. So, yeah, have you heard my nickname at the school where I work is actually PC Bollockhead.
PC Bollockhead.
Which I actually find hilarious, but I don't let them know that, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Why did you want to be a copper?
I don't know. I just like things being right, I suppose. And although I have broken the law in the past, that's why I didn't end up going down that road, because I had a criminal record. I don't know. It's just, I just like been on the right side of the law, really. And I don't like little things like littering and petty stuff. Do you know what I mean? Petty crime, it just winds me up. So, yeah, I wanted to be a policeman. And then as I got older, I wanted to be a stripper. Just because of women, you know what I mean? But yeah, I might actually go back to that at some point.
Well, if we have time after Q&A, maybe we can see what you're made of.
Yeah. I'm getting there.
I have a criminal record. I was DJing at his club, and I was sober as a judge, and I come out, and the Chinese was right next to the club. And there was a load of people out there because we just finished the night, you know. And one of my mates was down a little alleyway having a pee. And he said, oh, Ching, they used to call me Ching, right? Ching, come here. So he's talking to me and he's having a pee. So I'm just like, well, you know, so I whipped it out and I had a pee as well. And then a copper come and shone his light on it, you know. And then I ended up getting done for urinating in a public place. Sober, like, you know, like, you know, so... putting you on the spot, like, what's your criminal record for? I'm just hoping it's not murder or anything like that.
No, ridiculous, actually. And all drink related, to be honest. Drink driving, the morning after. I actually left my car in town, so I didn't drink drive. Picked it up in the morning, and I ran into the back of somebody, and I was twice over the limit. I stayed up quite late drinking vodka and stuff, and I'd had a few hours sleep. It's probably about 10:30 in the morning, and just the most embarrassing, horrible experience of my life, that whole, yeah. But I had done it before as well, but not blind drunk, if you know what I mean, like 2 or 3 pints and that kind of thing. And, yeah, it was coming to me, really, I think, in some way or another. Possession of drugs, what was that for? That was for ecstasy when we went to a club in Liverpool. Weirdly, we pulled up in the car park and there was police searching the car, and my mate said, well, we'll look guilty if I drive away now. And I'm like, no, drive away. And he pulled up next to him and they searched us. And we only got a caution, but he's still there on my record. So I got possession of drugs, drink driving. What was the other one? Oh, theft. So this is me wanting to work with young people and make a difference. So I'm turning up at places with this criminal record with possession of drugs, driving. I had some explaining to do, I'll tell you. But
at least you can have empathy with everyone.
Well, yeah, the theft was I was drunk on the ferry coming home from working abroad, and my friend was a blind drunk, I was blind drunk, and used to share rooms back then on ferries with people you didn't know. And we walked in the room and there was bags full of cigarettes. My mate said, oh, I'm going to take a load. And I was like, no, I have to sleep in here. So he took them anyway. So I took some and we went and slept in his room. And then when I got off, they knew that I'd shared the room and they just lifted me straight away. And he'd gone off in somebody's car. So I was like, and the guy was waiting at the ferry port and he's chasing me while the coppers have got older. Oh, that was horrible.
But, if anybody wants to know if alcohol rots your brain and makes you do stupid things, then, you know, John's just kind of nailed it there, hasn't he? I mean, yeah, it's really, it is quite interesting how you can get done for possession of ecstasy, probably in a place where they're selling alcohol behind you. For, you know, it's like, it's insane. Yeah. One drug is going to like chill you out and make you love people. The other one is going to make you smash a bottle on a bar and shove it in someone's throat. And you get arrested for having the one that's going to make people love each other.
Back then, in them days, it was all about like going around the clubs around the country, and we were going to cream in Liverpool. And I noticed a big change over a few year period when cocaine started getting more popular. There was more fights. Do you know what I mean? People started fighting in them clubs, whereas before that, there was no fighting. It was just ecstasy and kind of enjoying yourself and loving each other in the club. Do you know what I mean? It was. And I did that kind of thing, but I didn't really go too far. I kind of didn't do it ridiculously, but I did quite enjoy it at the time, to be honest.
I actually think that's the future, because if we're really serious about what impact we can make in our lifetime, you know, creating a movement of people that don't drink alcohol, we're not even going to touch the surface, because
we're fighting against 7.5 billion people who really want to get off their tits, right? There's no way around it. People want a different experience. So maybe, you know, the truth about alcohol should venture into at some point in the future, an alternative to alcohol, one that gives you everything that you want, this perceived value that we think that alcohol provides us with, but it takes away the negative and the, you know, the negative health aspects, the negative psychological aspects, you know. So maybe that's something to think about in future. And I'm sure some of those things exist today, you know, that can be used.
Well, I'm finding a lot of that in exercise at the moment. You know what I mean? It gives me the release. It gives me the break. You know what I mean? That from the mind chatter, it gives me, I don't tend to think about a whole lot when I'm running and just getting through it and the pain and the, but I quite like that. You know what I mean? It's, yeah.
So when you was a nipper, you wanted to be a copper, and then you decided that you'd just keep breaking the law as like work experience for that job. What was one of your toughest challenges you had growing up, and how did that really change and mould the person you are today?
The biggest challenge had to be my parents' divorce, really. That was when I was about 11. Yeah, that was actually quite traumatic, you know, like the circumstances and just the whole package, the arguing, the physical abuse, the drinking by my dad, the weird behaviour, not seeing my mum then for like 8 years or so, 7 or 8 years from being 11, 12 to being like 18 or 19. It's all a bit sketchy, to be honest. That was pretty difficult. And part of this was me and my brother went to live with my dad in a one-bedroom flat. So we were like just different from everybody, like the little trampy kids, you know what I mean? And we still had friends and stuff like that. But my brother got into heroin then, which was pretty horrible. So, but that was quite big on our estate for that age group, that generation. So my parents' divorce was massive, and I think now I don't want my daughter to experience something like that. You know what I mean? It wasn't nice. Just trying to be the best dad I can, really, and look after my dad who brought me up, really. You know what I mean? And I've built the relationship with my mum since all of this. I've had a lot of resentment down the years, but we went for mediation a couple of years ago because I did a counselling course and I worked through a lot of personal development stuff and all the stuff I need to work on. I'm at peace with what happened and looking at it, empathising with my mum, really, how awful it was for her. Rather than just thinking she abandoned me, which wasn't really true, but I thought that for about 20 years, didn't I mean? So that was pretty tough.
Really super brave of you to go into mediation, you know, when you're a lot older. Like, I can imagine the stereotypical male attitude would be, I don't need all that kind of stuff, and, you know, and so, yeah. You know, that. And the other thing is, It when you turn around then and said, I was able to have empathy for my mother, because your worldview about what happened was just purely created, I imagine, from your own thoughts, which are driving your own feelings, plus also skewed bias, maybe kind of like feedback from, you know, like your father's side of things, I guess.
Massively, that, Lee. Basically, my dad used to say your mother's dumped you and all stuff like that. He was very bitter. He didn't want the divorce. He's had mental health problems and that kind of thing. He's a complex man, my dad, but I love him to bits. You know what I mean? He's done the best he can with what he's got. And he had troubles when he was a kid. So, again, I can empathise with him as well. Whereas, being a dad now as well, like, thinking how awful that must have been for my mum to watch her sons walk out the door. Because I don't think she's the type of person that really wanted that now. I believe that. You know what I mean?
It really goes to show the power of empathy and how difficult it is for some people it's really natural, and people are just empathetic, and it's just that, you know, it happens to them, and they feel, and they're really sensitive, and then like for other people, you know, it's hugely a complex issue, but it's an important one, particularly when we talk about wanting to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. And you know, becoming a parent, it absolutely shines this like Batman like beam on a divorce, and you're like, oh, whoa, hang on a minute. You know, if my daughter wasn't with me 24/7 and she lived with her mom, I would be heartbroken, right? Mm-hmm. Irrespective of the reasons why. If I, you know, a good example, you know, one that I've experienced, John, is, you know, falling in love with somebody else and the guilt and the shame around that and how that affects your children and how difficult and complex it is to not fall in love with somebody else for the sake of your children, you know? So I think, mm-hmm. You know, empathy is really super important, and having kids gives you a different reflection. In the same way that drinking alcohol and losing control of it and being somebody who reaches out to strive and truth by alcohol actually makes a really, really good ambassador. And one of the reasons why I wanted you to be an ambassador is I personally think it's really important that when you're helping a Kim or you're helping a Craig or you're helping a Fred or a Pete or a Deirdre, yeah, that you have some inkling of what on earth is going on, not out of a textbook, but you've experienced it. I think it really helps a great deal.
Yeah, I don't think it comes that naturally to me, right? Do you know what I mean? It's something I've had to kind of work on, and I think just stopping and looking at that situation rather than just again, like you said earlier, that conditioning, it's quite hard to throw that conditioning off sometimes, isn't it? And I was thinking about that earlier, almost that, like, I don't know how I would be without being able to see my daughter. And I also can't comprehend how it would be to not want to see my daughter. So that's something I might have to deal with, like, here or in the counselling room, really, where someone brings something and they're so different to me, where their beliefs are so different.
Mm.
That is a challenge as a counsellor, but also as somebody who's on Strive, I suppose, being able to empathise with people whose beliefs are so much different from their own. And they come up every now and again for me in counselling, don't they?
And how did that experience when you were a kid going through the divorce, how has that moulded you into the person you are today? What, you know, both the good points and the negative points?
I still think I've got some of that conditioning from that process left in me, which comes up almost subconsciously through anxiety and that kind of thing. And a lot of that has gone now through stopping drinking, because my mind had just been going berserk when I had a hangover, even before I was drinking, while I was drinking, until I was blind drunk, I would be anxious. Do you know what I mean? So anxiety has been left with me from that experience. Not feeling good enough, almost that feeling that had been rejected by my mum, although I can rationalise that that's not actually true. So my relationship with her is fine. I still get that feeling that I can't relax. I need to be productive. I need to be pleasing people. And if I want to be seen, I like people to like me. Do you know what I mean?
Hmm.
I'm working through things like that at the moment. Which parts do I accept and which parts do I work on? Do you know what I mean? What is the real me? And that is still a process I'm going through.
When you're suffering from feelings of rejection and not good enoughness or whatever you want to call it, and anxiety over your childhood, how does being a drinker and not being a drinker, how do you process, what's the benefits and negatives here, like trying to process both? Where were you with this when you was a drinker, and where are you now with it?
It's more about clarity, really, for me. It just added more cloudiness over everything. Do you know what I mean? And because this is still fairly new to me, do you know what I mean? I'm still working through this process. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Although I'm happy with not drinking because I know it's no good for me because it heightens my anxiety. I've got no energy. It damages my health. My skin's crap. A million and one other things what are just horrendous. I don't give my daughter the time she deserves. I'm not a good husband. That kind of thing. And it's just, I can organize things better. I can put things down now. Whereas before, everything was just going around and around my head constantly. I can box things. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like everything's the same, but so much different. Do you know what I mean? And it's all in here where the problems were and still are to some extent.
It sounds like the thought process that I bang on about with fog. So like we're drinking. And while we're drinking, that whole kind of the reason we're drinking is people like us do things like this. So I'm drinking because that's what we do here where we live in Bolton, right? So what else do we do in Bolton? Well, here's like this blueprint. So we're all like, it's a zombification of life. We're not thinking. But then when you stop drinking, it's like the cloud like evaporates out your ears and there's all this empty space and it gets filled with questions. You know, it's like, what was that? There was a kids program where the question marks used to come out of that little tie. I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
Wordy. And then you start asking yourself questions all the time. But this time you're more able to answer them. So is that what we're talking about here? Is just having that like white space in my mind and it being filled up with questions that you're afraid of initially, but then you start getting, you know, interested in answering them.
Yeah, you're able to tackle things. You're able to move your life forward. Since I've been here in and posting on Strive, listening to podcasts, doing other things around not drinking and personal development outside of the truth about alcohol, which has been influenced by the truth about alcohol, I've been able to set up myself in private practice. Go back to a job at a school, which I hated. Now I actually quite enjoy because my mindset is just totally different. Just being able to organize that. I get unbelievably more fit than I ever have been. And I'm obviously as older than I ever have been. And now
You ran a half marathon a couple of days ago, right?
Yeah, on Sunday, and that was like, I was thinking, well, I'm not really trained for it, but I just thought, you know what, I'll just do it, because I've got friends now as well. I'm finding friends who I want to be my friends. Do you know what I mean? So I've now kind of befriended a guy who's my daughter's friend at nursery, her dad. He runs the Ironman, like, every other year in Bolton. That's the UK Ironman, and fortunately, or unfortunately for me, it's in Bolton every year, so that is like something that's chattering away at me now, and he's on at me now. So he's like a really good influence because he's a just do it kind of guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's not a massive pisshead. He's just like, he's into his fitness. He loves a drink, don't get me wrong. But yeah, so I'm finding friends who I want to be my friends now, and the things I'm interested in. Do you know what I mean? So that attitude I had before the weekend was almost like influenced by one of my new influences. Do you know what I mean? It was, do you know what? You haven't trained for a half marathon, but just do it. And if you have to walk, then you walk. But so much has come from not drinking.
Well, one of the important things you said then was, do you know what? I'll just do it.
Yeah.
And I think if more of us can develop that mindset. You know, do you know what? I'll just do it. It's because we live in a fear-based matrix, right? You know, we prevent ourselves from achieving our you know, true potential in life just purely because we're scared of everything. You know, and every single one of us here now on this call, Kim, Craig, yourself, me, we could all think of something that we are not doing right now because we're afraid of it. And if we go on, sorry.
Sorry, an example of that would be doing this tonight. I wouldn't have done this, no way. When you ask if one of us wants to lead a group on a Sunday evening, I said yes because I thought, you know what, I'm going to start saying yes more. Rather than I know I can do it. So why would I say no? I mean, I want to help people. What is it about me? What feels I'm not good enough to do that? So well, I would
part,
never be
part of this zombification of life, isn't it? We live a life in the shadows. We're not necessarily leaders. We're following the pack. Like nobody can. We've all got the same silhouettes. We all look the same. We're all acting the same. We're all behaving the same. And it takes an incredible amount of courage and vulnerability and bravery to say, no, I want to be different. And a classic example of this, John, isn't it, is, you know, the question of my friends won't accept me because I'm drinking alcohol, because I'm not drinking alcohol. You know, it's like, I'm so different to everybody else because I'm not drinking alcohol. And we need to develop this. Well, I don't give a fuck. Like, I do not give a fuck that I'm actually grateful that I'm different. So when I was a kid, I lamented the fact that I was different because I was Chinese, because I couldn't fit in. Now I celebrate the fact that I'm different. It's just a lot of the problems that we get ourselves into, it really is about reframing the way that we think about a situation. I think A, maybe what will happen if I think B, you know? And I think that's one of the things that we learn, particularly going through the intensive. Just focus on anxiety a little bit, because a lot of people listening to this, John, they'll believe that anxiety, that drinking alcohol quells their anxiety, that drinking, the reason they drink alcohol is because they spend all day in a job that they hate, getting really, really, really super anxious. And then they come home and there is that bottle of wine. There is that, you know, the BD things slipping down the side of the, you know, the chilled cider. And all of a sudden they think that it's curing their anxiety. But what you said to me is completely different. You said you was very, very anxious and you carried that with you all through your childhood, but drinking alcohol makes you less anxious. So what's going on? Where's the disparity there between what people think and what you're experiencing?
I always think of this example when I was playing poker one night and the dealers get a bit too chatty sometimes, don't they? And he's talking about, I can't wait for the break. I need a cig. And then I'm like, it'll kill you, that, you know. And he said, well, if you had an ex-missus like mine, then you'd smoke. And I'm thinking, do you know what I mean? So he needs to smoke because of his ex-missus. And you're thinking, that's the same with alcohol, isn't it? We use these excuses as to why we drink. But people who don't drink or don't smoke also have horrible ex-wives or ex-husbands or... And how do they deal with it? Do you know what I mean? It's like, so if you look at it from that angle, it's like, so everybody who has stress in their life has to drink or smoke. Well, no, they don't. You can do a million other things to relieve that stress when that is literally piling on more anxiety, more depression, more cloudiness, and it's just that, really. It just adds more on top. I was anxious before I went out because I was anxious thinking about how anxious I was going to be the next morning and thinking about how anxious my wife was because of what I was going to do that night. You know what I mean? And she'd be anxious thinking about what I was going to do that night. And I had some horrible, dark moments after I drank, and I would deal with that by drinking again. And I wasn't somebody on a park bench. I was a guy with a job, studying to be a counsellor. Do you know what I mean? And again, that was something what kind of made me look at myself and think, wait on a minute. I'm studying to be a counsellor and I'm all over the place. Do you know what I mean? I want to stop drinking, but I can't stop drinking. And I'm telling people how to deal with that in the counselling room. I'm a fraud. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely ridiculous behavior.
It's funny because we actually get a lot of people who counsel people, not just on alcohol, but alcohol part of it. But we get a lot of counselors here, you know. And you said like you feel like a fraud, and I think it's human nature to feel like a fraud when we're doing something that we're trying to help somebody else not do it. So like Holly was talking to me the other day about, like, you know, would you want to, like, can I kind of work with me on kind of some marriage stuff? And I was thinking, well, I'm always bleating on about how I'm screwing up my marriage, you know? So there is that. But I think what we learn at Strive is redefining what is normal. So when we look at alcohol, I think it's pretty clear now for all of us at Strive that the alcohol spectrum, which is something that we cover on the intensive, is very, very real. So instead of thinking to ourselves, I feel like a fucking fraud here because I'm like, I have an issue with alcohol and I'm a counselor. Better to think it's very likely on the law of probabilities that more counselors have problems with alcohol than they don't. More doctors have problems with alcohol than they don't. More surgeons have problems with alcohol than they don't. Just because our friends and our family are not coming forward to us and telling us they have a problem doesn't mean they don't have a problem, right? You know, a good example is the Adrian Childs documentary. He's going around his mates, isn't he? And he's, you know, and his mates are fucking knocking it back like nobody's business, just normally, like we do in the UK. None of them think they've got a problem, but of course they've got a problem, right? But to them, they would look at us if we said we stopped drinking and say, "What's your problem?"
Yeah.
You know, it's just a different way of looking at the world.
Well, now I'm of the mindset that if you drink any alcohol, you've got a problem, because why would you do it? Do you know what I mean? Why would you drink that? A guy said to me the other day, I was around his house, he said, "There's something wrong with this wine." I said, "Yeah, it's got ethanol in it, it's poison." He just shook his head as he said, "You idiot."
Yeah, I remember being at a 70th, my uncle's 70th, and my mum, his mum, who's like 90, and my mum, so like two people in their 60s and a 90-year-old, they're just staring at these nearly empty glasses, and they're all going, "This is shit, isn't it?" And my dad's going, "This is fucking awful." And his mum goes, "It's really bad." And my mum goes, "It's so rank." And my dad goes, "Well, do you want another round?" And they all went, "Yeah."
Yeah. And you do, don't you? If you get a pint, I was into real ales towards the end of my drinking. And you'd get it, and it wouldn't have a head, and it'd taste shit, and it's just still power through it. And you're just saying, "Why do you do that? What is absolutely rank? What am I doing?"
I love it. I love it. One thing I wanted to just comment on the anxiety thing as well is, I think it was probably coming. This thought is coming from a post that I was referring to earlier with Kim. Is we need to look at alcohol from a value proposition basis, right? So we drink alcohol because it has value to us. So if you think about that, if we didn't have any value to us, we wouldn't drink it, right? You know, the likelihood is we're less likely to drink it because it doesn't provide us with any value. All we've got when we have no value is the negative sides of it. Good example is heroin, right? We wouldn't take heroin because we don't think it has any value. You know, we certainly think that the bad negative aspects of heroin far outweigh the positives of taking it, right? But it's not like that with alcohol. And it won't just be anxiety. So if we think that drinking alcohol is an anxiety queller, if we think that it tastes nice, if we think that it cures boredom, if we think that it reduces our inhibitions and that's a good thing, if we think it quietens the voices in our head, if we think it gives us a terrific buzz, all of those things in isolation might not be powerful enough to put us over the edge. But if we add them all together, now we have quite a formidable object that we need to move. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's our resistance creating what you referred to earlier, John, is excuses. If I can, your resistance is almost saying, if I could build up more and more and more and more reasons why drinking alcohol is a really, really, really good idea, then this dam that I'm going to build is going to be impenetrable. I won't be able to break it down. So our job as Truth About Alcohol Ambassadors is to help strivers to say, okay, there's this huge big dam of value. Let's pick one brick, right? What's that one brick? Alcohol provides me with anxiety. Does it? And then we work through that. And if we get rid of all those bricks, then you're left with the most powerful question of all. Hang on a minute. Alcohol isn't providing me with any value, but I'm still drinking and I really want to drink. What's going on? And once you get to that question, for me anyway, all the dominoes fell, all the jingles went, all the kazoos went popping. And I was like, I get it. I'm just a fucking addict. I'm just addicted to alcohol. Now I can deal with that. I don't have to. It's not that I like to drink it. It's not that I feel sociable. It's not that I think it tastes nice. It's not that I like the buzz. I'm drinking it because I'm an addict. End of, you know.
Yeah. It's funny what you said there about heroin. I'm thinking, while you're saying it, that actually, for me, the value in heroin for a heroin user is actually there because it anaesthetizes them within seconds, and that's what they need. So there actually seems to be more value in doing heroin for me than drinking alcohol.
No, I agree with that. Like when I remember when I left the railway, and I wasn't subjected to drugs and alcohol anymore. I was just like, right, I'm just going to take loads of drugs because I love taking drugs, because for me they provided me with value. They, like, when I was speeding, I felt an incredible buzz, right? Mm. I felt an incredible buzz. When I was drinking alcohol, there was no buzz that could be compared to the buzz I was feeling when I was on speed. They're incomparable. Just like when someone says to me, oh, I just went outside and had a cigarette and I had a right buzz. No, you didn't. You just felt a little bit lightheaded for 2 seconds. Yeah. Like, a buzz is you've just made love for an hour and you've just had a rip-roaring orgasm. That's a buzz, you know? Yeah. Like, so I agree with you, like, you know, for somebody who is taking those drugs, there are some real key value propositions there. But even then, so if you're suffering from a drug addiction, you've got to flip the switch a little bit and stop thinking about the short-term instant gratification, and you've got to think long-term. So, yeah, this hit of heroin is really great, but the likelihood of me getting AIDS or the likelihood of me, like, you know, overdosing, or who's going to marry me because I'm a heroin addict. Like, now you start working on the long term, which is what we do at The Truth About Alcohol.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about values, John. Did you pay any attention to them when you was a drinker? Did you think about them? Were they driving your life? And how did that change when you stopped drinking alcohol?
Values for me. So before, while I was drinking, what were my values? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Did you even consciously?
My values were have as good a time as possible. Enjoy it. Enjoy the time while you can. And while I was drinking, see, I kind of think of like my drinking was when I was going out with my mates and enjoying myself, which is kind of like the trap, isn't it? Where, and then when you get older, it kind of creeps up on you and you're left with the alcohol use because of all this brainwashing you've given yourself about how much of a great time it gave you with all your friends, when that actually it was just being with your friends and having a laugh what was the good time. An example of that would be like going to Amsterdam with the lads. I'd never think, oh, them beers were great. I'd have pictures of in my head of things what happened and daft little things what were said and stupid things we'd watched. And do you know what I mean? So for me, the values I had as a drinker were more around having a good time while I can, if you know what I mean. Like, I knew that I was going to be a more serious person when I was older, but then I kind of got in a bit of murky water in the middle, where I was struggling to get away from the alcohol. It was becoming a problem. So yeah, value wise, that was all I had really. I mean, I always tried to be a good person and not be nasty to people and just try and do what was right. I would stay healthy as well. I was always I'd kind of dig a hole and then climb back out again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd drop off the booze for a while, or I'd stop taking drugs for a while and I'd get back to the gym. Because I care what people think of me and what I look like. Do you know what I mean? Whether that's vanity or I don't know, it's just caring what people think. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that goes back to something you said about at the beginning at the top of the show about what marked you from your divorce was rejection.
Yeah.
So the opposite of rejection is the, like, you know, if you felt that your mother didn't love you, and want you, then you want everybody to fucking want you and love you. Compensate for that.
Yeah, and that is probably where that came from, really. Just looking at it from a personal development perspective and picking your life to bits, like, where does this feeling come from, and why do I want to kind of stand out and scream and shout, like, look at me. As an example, one of my posts this week was praising it, because I'm now aware that I actually thrive off praise. Do you know what I mean? So I'm having a bit of tongue-in-cheek, like, I want praise. And I don't know why I do it, because it's almost like I get the praise and it's still not good enough. Do you know what I mean? I can never win. It's like any problem with self-esteem or looking for external validation. You can never win. You're never going to win. You're never going to get enough until you become aware. I'm a bloody counsellor. I'm still struggling with it. You know what I mean?
But it's beautiful. It's beautiful though that you can talk about that. I think that shows an incredible amount of vulnerability to turn around and say, I want a lot of fucking praise. I want people to love me. I want people to like me, because that is human. And not having that fog and that alcohol allows you to ask those questions. What is it? What is it that's driving this? And is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do I need to balance it out? Do I need to turn the volume down a little bit? But I imagine you wasn't even having those conversations when you was drinking, right?
A lot of the time, not. But I was always, yeah. I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. I think I was, and I think that's what always kind of made me pull away and sort myself out. Do you know what I mean? I'd start to get a bit worried and I'd cut myself off from everybody for a while. And even when I was working abroad, I did that. I'd just disappear and kind of sort myself out for a bit and then reemerge and then get back on it.
Yeah. Because it sounds like you didn't have a plan. So it sounds like cognitive dissonance comes in. You realize that this doesn't feel right. You back away a little bit, but there's no plan. Like, what do I do? Where do I go? How do I act? So you end up drifting back into, like driftwood, just drifting back into the tribe that you know and behaving the way you know how to behave.
Yeah, because that's where you feel comfortable. You don't know any different, and you don't want to take the time to build up a different life. Do you know what I mean? Which is kind of like where I am now. Do you know what I mean? With the change I've gone through, isn't just from last July. Since joining The Truth About Alcohol, I've tried many times. Do you know what I mean? I've tried and I've fell back down loads of times. So if anyone's like looking at me on The Truth About Alcohol, this isn't just a breeze of 8 or 9 months where I've decided to stop drinking and I've just stopped. This is like been going on for 20 years, do you know what I mean? On and off. I stopped in 2012 for 8 months. I went back to it. I didn't have a plan. I was using willpower. I didn't have a plan. The difference this time is that I found this place and I've done more personal development. I've met like-minded people. All of that, you know what I mean? And without this, I don't know if I would be talking like this or feel as comfortable about being someone that doesn't drink alcohol now.
You almost answered your own question from the other day when you said, what's the lifespan of a striver? When does someone go, I don't need to listen to Lee banging on anymore. I don't need to listen to John and Craig and I don't need to talk to Kim. I mean, you asked that, but then you've just answered it by saying, I've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I've been someone who doesn't drink alcohol for a decade now, a little bit over a decade. So it was 3 years that I'd gone when I drank again for a month. So, for me, I think you should think about Strive as being more than an online resource. And this is our pub.
Yeah.
This is this is where we come to meet like-minded friends and we build relationships outside of our virtual pub. We can, you know, like you meet up with Craig, me and you met up. I'm going to go back to Wales and I'm going to meet Ian. You know, we're going to, you know, the Aussies and the New Zealand, the Australasian lot are all starting to have group meetings. And, you know, I don't know how far away they live from each. Stella's in New Zealand at the moment, goes and, you know, goes and sees Nikki. I mean, I think it's crucial that people understand what Johnny's saying here. To have absolute patience with yourself, yeah. and to realize that screwing things up, hitting the deck, you know, all those kind of things, they're super important, aren't they?
And everybody's process is different, and not to kind of look at other people's experience on here and think, oh, they're doing really well, why can't I? Mm. When I just said there, I've been going through this on and off for so long, and it's just that at this point, the stars have almost aligned, if you know what I mean. Like it was the right time. I met the right people. I've chucked myself into it. I've got involved. I'm constantly listening to podcasts. I'm reading personal development stuff, audio books. I go to bed at night, stick an audio book on. I'm trying to get fit. I'm looking to fill that white space. I was saying to Craig the other week, we were saying like, I don't know how I ever had time to drink alcohol. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't, it won't fit into my life anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's not something that could ever come in because I just haven't got the space for it. I ain't got time to be shaking off an hangover. I've got stuff to do. Do you know what I mean?
For me, what's different for me now is I have a schedule. I have a plan. Like I have somewhere that I want to get to. And because I know where I want to get to, I have a plan. So if someone says to me, for example, let's say like Poker Stars are doing a Sunday Million anniversary special for £10 million, right? Guaranteed on a Sunday. I ask myself, do I want to spend like 12 to 18 hours sitting in front of my computer playing poker? Like, and then when I ask that question, I it stands up against all the other priorities I've got. Whereas before when I was drinking, I wouldn't ask the question. I would just be like, I've got to play that game. Because yeah. there was no sense of priority or no purpose. It was just, I'm just going to play that game because I want to be a millionaire. Where today it's like, actually sitting here talking to John is more important than playing in that tournament. Not that playing poker and playing golf and playing football isn't important, but 12 hours, maybe yeah. pushing it a little bit. So like, for me, it's like having that priority system in place. And that comes by, again, surrounding yourself with successful people, modeling what successful people do, learning meaning and purpose, which we do on the intensive, you know, and having these conversations. I mean, you said a few things there that work for you. Let's just like do a little headline here and underline it and then go through that again. What were the really important things that led to you becoming someone who doesn't drink alcohol? Because you said you've been at this for 20 years. What are the things that have really worked? Let's just focus on that again. I know you said some of them, but let's do that again.
What have worked for me to stop drinking alcohol?
What? Yeah, if you was to give someone advice,
yeah,
this is what you do to stop drinking alcohol. What worked for you? What would advice would you give to yourself going back 20 years?
Well, don't follow the crowd. Don't do things. Just because everyone else is doing it doesn't make it right. You know what I mean? Question things, get as much help as you can around whatever it is you want to stop doing. Say stop drinking alcohol, then find as much help as you can. Find people that have stopped drinking alcohol, ask them what they did, share ideas, talk to people, post triggers, listen to podcasts, Lee's, and there's many others out there. Listen to audiobooks. I mean, I've listened to the Alan Carr book numerous times. I stick it on in my car. I listen to Eckhart Tolle and the Power of Now stuff. Just surround yourself with positive things. I posted something the other week about being a sensitive person, and I am a sensitive person. I'm very sensitive to caffeine. I'm sensitive to drugs. I'm sensitive to alcohol. I'm sensitive to negative emotions. But on the flip side of that, flip it on its head, do positive things, get healthy, eat healthy, listen to positive stuff. Do you know what I mean? And I'm more susceptible, and that really gets into me. Do you know what I mean? And I dare say that a lot of people who have trouble with alcohol are possibly sensitive people too. Or if not the vast majority.
I think that sensitivity is a big reason the cognitive dissonance is allowed to sneak in. I think very definitely. I mean, I learned a lot from Jeremy Griffith's work on The Species of Denial and his views on the human condition. And he talks about that time period when you become a teenager where you have a choice to make, where you realize that, shit, I'm changing from a kid who thinks the world is spectacular and I can do what the hell I like, and to being an adult, knowing that you're going to have to follow this blueprint. I'm going to have to do some stuff here I don't want to do. I'm going to have to be friends with that guy and I don't want to do that. I'm going to have to go to school and I don't want to go to school. I'm going to have to do my homework and I don't want to do it. I'm going to have to drink alcohol. I don't want to. I'm going to have to smoke a cigarette. I don't want to. I'm going to have sex. I don't want to, right? And we had those choices. And then most of us, we just go along and we follow the blueprint. But there are a few who choose to buck that trend, who are strong enough at such an early age. And I can't remember what he called them. They're almost like pioneers. But those people are super, super sensitive. And they will have a really, really difficult childhood. Really, really difficult childhood. Yeah. But I'm telling you what, when they get to being an adult, they're fucking switched on. Like they're a different gravy. They know who they are. They don't have to go through the decades of work that we do to try to figure out who we were, you know? Yeah. So I think I agree with you. I think sensitivity is something that I see a lot with people who decide to stop drinking alcohol.
Yeah. The sad thing is what you say there about them people that decide to be different early on. I dare say quite a lot of them get that much shit that they get older and they've got a lot of crap going on, thinking that they're odd when really they're not. They're just themselves, do you know what I mean? And they've dared to be themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's very polarized. In my experience, it seems very polarized. But there again, I was one of those kids that I wasn't one of those pioneers. I followed the blueprint of life, but I didn't follow it freely. Like I see so many people on Strive who throughout their life have always known that the world is not quite right. They've always felt that they're a little bit special, that they've always felt that what they're doing is a little bit wrong, right? So I was one of those. And then you have other people who are just like complete death effect. Like if I was to speak to me mum and dad about drinking, that complete death effect, they'd just be like, what's wrong with it? I'm just moderately drinking, you know, twice a week for the last 60 years. What's your fucking problem?
And I think I'm the same as you there, that I have followed, but I've always felt that something's not quite right, and done like things like I say, just take myself away. I went travelling by myself just to get away. My mates couldn't get their head around why I would do that. Mm. Just things like that. And I feel so lucky that I've been like that and now finally made that move. Do you know what I mean? I mean, life's hard enough without having alcohol pissing about with your mind, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's like we're always in transition of some sort, which is tough for us to deal with anyway, from being a teenager, from a toddler to a child, child to teenager, teenager to adult, adult to older adult, losing your fitness, losing your hair. Do you know what I mean? It's tough. So why do you want to dampen it all by anaesthetizing yourself with that? It's and I've done it for so long, and I'm just so glad that I've found that I don't have to do that.
Got two more questions to ask you, and I'll open the floor up to Kim and Craig. So have a think about what you want to ask him in a minute, folks. You don't have to, by the way, but if you do have a question, get ready for it. You said there, when I asked you what advice you give people to stop drinking alcohol, first thing you said was, don't follow the crowd. You don't have to do what everybody else does. Oh, okay. That's easier said than done. So how have you done it?
I've spoke a bit about this on Strive, and I always say it's quite easy for me because I met my wife who's in Bolton near Manchester, and I'm originally from Hull, which is 100-odd mile away. And it's almost like I've been trying to escape for a long time. Like I say, I went travelling by myself. I moved away when I was about 19 to live in Leeds. And I'd always kind of escape everyone, like, because they were a bad influence, but really it was me that was the bad influence. But I just needed to get away, so I didn't have to be that bad influence anymore. So I'd say I did it by finally kind of getting away for good. Although, when I did get away to go travelling, I'd find my same people and I'd do the same thing, like we were saying earlier. I'd try with other groups of people, and like the kids that were doing all the trips when I went to Australia, and it just wasn't me. I mean, I'd find it more comfortable in the local boozer, getting shit-faced, travelling from the inside of an Irish bar. Like everywhere I went, find an Irish bar and just get wasted. So I don't know. So maybe it isn't the moving away, because even if I went back home now, I wouldn't be influenced by them people. I feel strong enough to not do that. So don't move away, everyone. That's not the answer. I can't put my finger on it. I think it's just growing up and finally making that choice, making that vow, if you like, do you know what I mean? But because before you make the vow on Strive, you've more or less made that vow to yourself anyway, I think, when you make that decision. It was just a culmination of anxiety problems, not really giving my daughter the time she deserves, not giving my wife the time she deserves. Why should my wife experience anxiety because we're going out for a meal? Do you know what I mean? Actually questioning that, not being the victim, not thinking, ah, shut up. Do you know what I mean? You've got a problem, when it really it's me that's got a problem. And I haven't done it for everybody else. That's not how it is. I've done it for myself. If my life as I know it would end at this moment, for some horrific reason, I would still hopefully be, I'm quite positive I'd be someone that doesn't drink alcohol.
It sounds like priorities again. You know, we said earlier on about how now you've got like a, you know, if you want to go and do a certain thing, there's like this, there's this map, like there's this, like, where does this fit into my life? It's almost like, you use the word growing up. So it's a lot of lads, like the lads mentality is like, I'm going to spit in my hand, or I'm going to cut my hand, and we're going to be blood brothers for life. And that bond is stronger than like marriage, you know, it's like, and then all of a sudden you just have to grow the fuck up and look around and go, hang on, what's more important? Am I going to go down a pub and mess around and hang out with my mates? Or am I going to build my relationship and be a better husband to my wife? Or am I going to be closer to my kid and be in my kid's life? Or am I going to work on my business, you know, or personal growth, et cetera, et cetera. And then it sounds like you did something very similar to me, which was pretty kind of like epic, if you like, which was say, I'm actually not going to bother with any of my mates. And I'm just going to just concentrate on getting myself better. And we'll see what happens after that. And you just mentioned, you know, some guy says, come on, let's go do the Ironman. You know, that guy could turn out to be Rich Roll, right? And then you go around Rich Roll's house and it's like, what are we going for dinner? And he's like, well, actually, I'm a vegan. And you're like, oh, fucking hell, what am I going to eat? And then you eat something and it's nice. And Rich is talking about veganism. And you're like, actually, this sounds like the next step. I want to, you know, look, he's very successful. It's working for him. So now all of a sudden, because of the people you're hanging around with, it's your life is different, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I was always quite jealous of the people that could just go out, get shit-faced, get up, go get shit-faced, not even question it. And I dare say we've all on here have got friends like that who would think, God, what? How can you just do that? Do you know what I mean? But they will break at some point. Something will break them at some point, I think.
Well, they're already broken. Like, yeah, my old man, like, he prides himself on never having an hangover, right? I don't believe him. Just because I never see him puking, just because I never see him feel, you know, I don't feel what he feels, I don't believe him. I just think it's a load of bullshit. I think what we talked about earlier, you hit the nail on the head earlier on, right? When I said to you, how do you explain to people that who are listening to this thinking that alcohol cures their anxiety, and you're saying by stopping alcohol, it cures your anxiety. How can we deal with that paradox? And you said, well, because it's just an excuse. Like telling yourself that alcohol helps cure my anxiety is an excuse to drink alcohol. So everybody we meet who's drinking alcohol is going to be riddled with excuses. It's one of the first things you learn about an addict. It's just they're just full of shit. It's just we don't identify our mum, our brother, our sister, our teacher, our doctor as an addict. But they are addicts if they're drinking alcohol and they can't stop.
Yeah.
And the ones who say, yeah, but I can stop if I want. No, you can't. And you'd find it really super difficult.
It's like that going on holiday thing. Why do you drink every night when you're on holiday? Because you can, because you don't have to be up for work the next day. So if you're not... I used to tell myself, right, I'm going to have a night off tonight on holiday. And this is while my daughter's been like 2 years old. And the guy had walked around in the all-inclusive with a tray of beers and my arm had come out. And in my head, it's then fuck it. I'll do it tomorrow. And I'm not going to do it tomorrow. I'm just going to drink because I can. So I'm an addict. Do you know what I mean? I'm going on an all-inclusive in May. This is going to be a big one. But I mean, early on in my alcohol free career back in August, I went on holiday with the in-laws, which was pretty easy, to be honest, not too bad, and that was quite early on. But an all-inclusive with another couple as well, but that's the Iron Man guy, you see. So he's a drinker, but he fully understands why I don't drink.
Just on that, and then I'm going to move on to the last question because I know we've reached an hour.
Yeah,
please, John, while you're being influenced by him because he's an Iron Man or whatever he is, make sure that you remember that he can be influenced by you because you're not putting fucking poison down your throat.
Massively. And I dare say he has been, and my wife has been. Her drinking has cut down dramatically. I've had friends message me when they're feeling vulnerable after a heavy weekend, and then that dies off. It's almost like they're embarrassed a couple of weeks later that they contacted me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, lots of people have been influenced and admiring me. But everybody says, oh, I wish I had your willpower.
I wish I had the balls to do what
you did. And I'm like, don't get me started on willpower.
That's what people... I remember the first time that I ever went out after I'd stopped drinking alcohol. It was to a poker tournament in Nantymoyle Rugby Club. You cannot get more aggressive than this place. And everyone was like, why aren't you drinking? What the fuck's the matter with you? And I'm like... And because I don't give a shit. I'm a red. I don't care. Right. So I'm like, I'm not drinking because it's fucked my life up. And I will look him in the eye and just fucks my life up. I don't want to run away from it. I don't want to hide. I don't want to make an excuse. I don't want to tell you I'm on antibiotics. I don't like it. I fucking hate it. It's ruined my life and I'm not drinking it anymore. And if you've got a problem with that, then you've got a fucking problem with it. And everybody was like, oh, wow, man. I wish I had the balls to do what you're doing. Fucking well done, mate. Not one person turned around and said to me, you fucking prick. Not one person did, you know. Last question then. How does being someone that doesn't drink alcohol make you feel, John?
I think I covered a bit of it earlier, really. It's amazing, really. It's like I said earlier, I don't know why this phrase is in my head. It's like everything's the same, but so very different. You know what I mean? It's like everything around me is the same. My life, everything. But the way I see it all, it's just different, really. It's just, yeah. And only just recently, like the last couple of months, have I started looking forward to going out to social events. Like we went out in Manchester on Saturday, and I'm just totally comfortable now. Dying. I found I don't need alcohol-free drinks. I just enjoy drinking water, or I'll order a pot of tea. You know, like the Iron Man guy says to me, God, a different tea for every occasion. I have got like every different tea. Do you know what I mean? I like a peppermint tea after my meal. I do like a red bush tea, very nice. Chamomile tea before bed. I do like a cup of tea. And I've since cut out the coffee quite recently as well.
Yeah,
so
I remember you were saying that, yeah.
I'm struggling.
It sounds like that Bradley Cooper movie. Do you know when they take that tablet, the NZT or whatever it is, and all of a sudden they're like, everything's bright and their intelligence level just peaks, like, you know?
Yeah. So again, some of that, how does it feel to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol? You realise that a lot of the emotions you experience are a normal part of life, but you can deal with them.
Yeah.
Like when you were saying earlier about staying up all night playing poker or whatever, I can actually do that and then get over it. Whereas when I was drinking, I was getting over the alcohol and the guilt and the whatever aftermath there was from drinking. But I'm just a little bit more tired if I stay up a bit later now. It takes me one more night and I'm good, do you know what I mean? I'm back to normal. But yeah, so I'm realising that a lot of the emotions, a lot of who I am is actually who I am. And I am a bit of a dick, really, do you know what I mean? I'm not the genius I thought I was going to be if I stopped drinking. I've still got a lot of the same characteristics. But I'm comfortable with that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so I can still be a bit of a tool, but I'm actually quite happy that I'm a bit like that. Do you know what I mean?
All the Americans watching this are thinking, "What the fuck's he on about? What's a tool?"
Right. A guy said to me on Saturday night, he said, "Do you know what? You're just as much fun when you're not drinking as when you are drinking." And I said, "Why didn't you tell me that 5 years ago? I'd have bloody stopped then." You know what I mean? He said, "I've always thought that." I'm thinking, why didn't you bloody tell me? Do you know what I mean?
I know. Right, I'm going to open up to questions. Kim or Craig, just do that if one of you wants to ask him something. Okay, Kim, I'm going to unmute you. Shoot.
Okay, hi, John. My question is, I'm going through probably when I hit day 12, 13, 14, I started to get pummeled by triggers, and I'd go on post on the triggers, but I think I'm concentrating more on dispelling the myth of why there's value rather than really concentrating on why I believe there's actual value and unpacking that first. And I'm doing that now, and I feel like it's quite freeing to actually face up to the fact that, yes, I do have this belief that alcohol's great, instead of just trying to shut it down and prove that's not right. And I'm just wondering how early on in your, whether it was the taster or the intents of how you dealt with those triggers and that cognitive dissonance, and whether you went through that as well.
I did, but like I said earlier, I would listen to something. I would listen to the Alan Carr book on audio. If I could take myself away. We spoke about this with somebody else recently, and almost like once you get past a certain point, it's what I kind of coined as the no point point. You get to the point in the night where actually, there's no point in having a drink now, because what's the point? You know, it'll be bedtime soon. And for me, that kind of, it was like when I stopped smoking, it passes. And you've got to be strong enough to kind of get through it in the beginning, really. There is some hard work involved, and there is maybe a bit of willpower involved, a bit of both, really, at the beginning. And I'd say just kind of almost like exposure therapy, really, just going through it, going through the pain, going through the whatever you've got to do to whether that's contacting somebody directly. I don't know if you have anybody your side, your Australia, aren't you? Where you can like buddy up with and that kind of thing, which we've done recently. But yeah, it wasn't easy. And I found that talking to somebody about it, even if it be a family member, or listening to something positive, something what just calms you down a bit more, taking yourself out for some exercise, doing something different. I don't know if, is it in certain environments, or is it just a time, or is it, what is it for you?
I think it's definitely, yeah, I think it's both actually, and just such an ingrained thing that you do from 5 o'clock till seven. But I think what you're saying is, I think once I get to that hard bit where I go, this is just, oh my God, it's so hard. And then I panic. And then I start thinking, I'm not getting it. And then all, it just pummels me, where it is really just that it is hard from 5 till 7, but I'm trying to fix it and not make it hard.
Yeah. What about planning ahead for that 5 till 7 period? I don't know what Lee thinks about that, but planning for where am I going to put myself? Who am I going to be around? Because at first I did a lot of avoiding, which I think is quite important, or it was definitely for me. Like I say, avoiding, knocking back kind of invitations to poker nights with the lads. I just can't do it. It's not going to happen. I'm going to end up getting influenced. I'm going to end up drinking. So for me, it was avoiding them situations and getting involved on Strive or listening to something or going for a run. Do you know what I mean? Doing something else and keeping yourself safe really early on. That was what it was for me. And because you've got that white space, haven't you? You need to fill that space with something.
Yeah, and I definitely do. I have a really strong structure, but sometimes my mind just gets away. And it has really only been probably the last 3 or 4 days. And I've only drunk one day, which was on the 12th, which was day 12 gate that I'm calling it.
Kim, just to add to what John said there, I think Strive and the Truth About Alcohol experiences, the taster and the intensive and working with various ambassadors and reading people posting about everything, it can give a little bit of like a golden kind of flavor, like an almost too perfect scenario. And I think what happens in reality is really important that you understand it. So I gave up drinking reading a book. So whenever I have to empathize with people about triggers, it's really difficult for me because I think to myself, well, I just read a book and I just got it. But if you think about it, there's no way that that is possible. Like what is more likely is that the cognitive dissonance was likely with me for decades. And I did try to stop drinking on numerous occasions, but like you, I couldn't defeat those triggers. It's just that I didn't have Strive or a Lee or a John or a Craig saying, answer these fucking 13 questions, right? So probably the way that I dealt with my triggers is I just drank. And I drank 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 until I developed a combination of the right knowledge, a catalyst to change, which was I need to change, otherwise my marriage is going to fall apart. The right knowledge, Alan Carr, and then a certain drive, and like it's almost like the perfect storm. So what I would say is, you're in the right place. You are going to drink, and when you do drink, your triggers are going to be intensified for a period of time. The mere fact that you didn't develop a case of the fuck it and drink just nonstop for a week and disappear off Strive shows me that you have the grit and determination to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol. And it's not a question of if you're going to be that person. It's a question of when you're going to be that person. So I would just, whenever you're beating yourself up and saying, I'm not getting it. Yeah. Just give yourself 5 minutes to go, that's right. Lee didn't get it. John didn't get it. Craig didn't get it. Nikki didn't get it. It's okay. I'm not supposed to get it. It will come when it's right. And we just keep batting down that door. We keep going with it. And the thing is, we just never get out of the trenches. We never get out of the arena. We never get back into the cheap seats. That's the key. Once we get back into that cheap seats, then we lose momentum and we lose that drive. And our vow doesn't mean anything. But the vow is like central to it. The vow keeps us in the arena with a sword in our hand, ready to go again, you know? What I see in you right now is an incredible amount of courage and bravery to keep popping up. I can't remember the last time someone wrote like four or five consecutive posts in the triggers. the reason why it's because people are not ready to be that vulnerable, you know?
Yeah.
But it is the key. Like, it literally is the key. It's just keep, because every time you do those 13 questions, you're firing new neurons that are connecting to your beliefs around alcohol. But it's like lifting weights. You look in the mirror and you think, oh, I'm still fucking fat. And then the next day you're looking, I'm fat. This isn't working. But if you keep doing it over time, you'll look and you'll be like, oh, where did this come from? Same in meditation. Close your eyes. You think, I'm just an idiot. Nothing's happening. I've got thoughts in my head. But then 6 months down the line, your wife will turn around and say to you, do you know what? You're a lot calmer than you used to. Your husband will turn around and say to you, you know, you're a lot more chilled out than you used to. Oh, fucking hell, this meditation thing works. It's the same with this. You will not see the progress necessarily, but we will see it in you. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Do you have anything else you want to ask him, Kim?
No, I think that's it. Thanks. Yep.
What about you, Craig? You got anything for him? Boom, go for it.
All right, John.
Hey, all right.
How you doing?
Good, mate, yeah. Fine.
Yeah, first of all, congratulations for doing this. Shows a lot of balls.
Yeah,
no worries. Yeah, it's, I was just looking, you did a mastermind not long ago, and you're going around like the first post. So I went back and read your first post, and it's great to see the difference in your, what is it, 9 months from your first post to now.
Yeah, been 9 months, beginning of April, I think. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
It's totally different, isn't it? Like reading your first post and what you're doing now, it's great. Anyway, I'll stop babbling. just want to ask you, how has your relationship with your wife changed? And, you know, what does she think about you not drinking? And also, how is her still drinking affecting you? How's that going?
Firstly, about the relationship, it's actually our 9-year anniversary today.
Congratulations.
How romantic are we? So, yeah, we've not really seen each other today, actually. So, yeah, things are really good. Definitely improved, I'd say. Just because I'm more of a person than I was, basically. I actually bought her a card. I might post a picture of it, actually. The weekend when we met in Cuba because my friend got married in Cuba and she was a friend of a friend. And I can just see it in my eyes, just the pain and just horrible. I'll post it in. Just looking at my face, and I just put on the card, like, how did you put up with that moron? And I'm really sorry about the moronic years. And because I just can't actually believe it. Must have been pretty desperate, to be honest, because I was an absolute idiot. You know what I mean? But probably a lot of fun as well, but I don't know. So things have definitely improved just because, like I say, I'm better all round, I'd say. And hair drinking, was something else, wasn't it? It was hair drinking relationship. What was the other thing?
Yeah. That was it. What does she think about you not drinking? Oh, how's your relationship changed?
She loves it now. At first, it was a bit like, because I was the holier than thou attitude at first. And then you soon learn, Don't be like that for too long. You know what I mean? It just gets on people's tits. So don't do it. So yeah, she's absolutely fine with it. She loves it. And it's more about like she can enjoy herself a lot more now because, and by enjoying herself isn't about her drinking more. It's just that she's more relaxed when we go out and dine. Because she used to be really anxious about what I'd do. I'd want to stay out. I'd leave hotel rooms and go to the casino by myself, didn't I? And turn up 5 hours later, out of my mind, and with an empty wallet. But yeah, so, and hair drinking, it's actually never been that bad. She was just one of them people who never really let go, didn't we? Not let go, but not go too far. So if she feels really drunk, she'll drink water and pull it back and always be kind of on a level. But she's definitely cut back a lot more now. She's not drinking as much. I think because of the positive change in me, she's actually seen how good it's been for me, and she wants a bit of that maybe, or just that I'm not doing it, so it's not in her eye line. I don't know, and I'm fine with it, to be honest. If somebody wants to drink and they don't have a problem with it, it doesn't cause them any issues, all right, I don't think that they should do it. But if they want to do it and it's not an issue for them, then fair enough. You know what I mean, it's each to their own, isn't it? But anyone who's questioning it, who has got a problem with it, who wants help with it, like everybody here, then I would say stop doing it. So yeah, and I just, it's back to you, Kim. I'm just thinking that I think it's amazing what you're doing, and the fact that you drank and you carried on and you've come back. Everybody's process is different, and don't beat yourself up because other people seem to be breezing through it. Like I said before, I've fallen down a million times, and like Lee said, it is that altering that brain chemistry and putting new ideas in. You've been battered by brainwashing for all your life that drinking's right. Batter yourself that drinking's wrong. That's what I did. Put everything in there to just counter brainwashing. You know what I mean? And that's what I did, basically. Just a barrage of whatever I could, just to get it in there that it's not good.
Yeah. So it's all happening perfectly. That's what you're saying.
You're on. You're doing the right things. Yeah. Just buckle in for the long haul. And it's like someone said to me, I was on an entrepreneurial group yesterday, and I was asking them for advice to get more people to take the intensive. And it's not, I want to get more people to take the intensive so I can be a gazillionaire. It's my purpose in life is to help people quit alcohol, to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. For me, that happens by digging in long-term and going through something like the intensive, you know? It's really important. So the challenge that we have as ambassadors all the time, you know, is how can we convince people that this is a long-term thing? And somebody said to me, look at the weight, you know, the weight loss industry, for example, is a good example. You know, you're not going to go on a diet tomorrow and all of a sudden you're going to see the results. You have to say to yourself, this has to be like a permanent life-changing change. It can't be a diet. We know diets don't work. We need to actually have a paradigm shift here and change our values and our worldview, our friendships, everything about our life. We have to change it right now to put health and well-being first and foremost. Alcohol's not a part of that. Well, that's not going to be done in a month or 2 months. You know, that's not going to be done in a year. Like, this is something that we need to work on constantly. But at the same time, realize that change the definition of work. You know, what are we doing now? We've been on it now for 90 minutes. I think we've all had fun. Even John, who's been under the mic, you know, the spot, he's had fun. You've probably had fun listening to him. But this is also work, as we, you know, we call it. So, you know, let's have fun with it. Let's not think that it's like really, really bad. Oh, no, I have to think about alcohol all the time. Yeah, you do if you don't want to drink it. Unfortunately, you do have to do it. Just have trust in Craig. You know, he'll take care of you and guide you through, and just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll keep giving you feedback. Right, we've been here for 90 minutes, which is a football match. Football's boring, but this wasn't. This was really interesting. John, I just want to round off by saying big kiss for me on top of your bald head. I'm really, really, really proud of you. I think your decision to stick around here, be an ambassador, run the online groups with Craig when I'm not around, when I'm traveling around the world trying to pretend I'm a superstar. I really, really appreciate it. You know, your work that you're doing now, to kind of see if you could be like an ambassador teacher. You know, like a lot of people stop drinking. What you're doing is you're giving back. And for me, in the six stages of change that we're going to talk to the Prochaskas about tomorrow, like the top one for me is not termination, it's service. It's like, how do we now serve others to cement our belief that, you know, that alcohol is no good for us? And you're doing that right now, and you're doing a fantastic job of it. I see you as a friend now, you know, and I think we're going to be friends for many, many, many years. And
yeah, just on that, I would say that helping others is a big help as well, Kim.
Yeah,
definitely. Getting involved, helping others, and you posting your stuff is helping others.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
As well as yourself.
Yeah.
Keep doing it. You know what I mean?
And thank you, Craig, too.
It's amazing.
Hello, Craig. Thank you.
Oh, is this the first time you've seen each other?
Yeah.
It's much better when you see a face, right?
So. Yeah.
It is. It's like, there's my angel.
Right, let's get off here, folks. Get back on with our lives. Take care, everybody.
So,
bye.
Bye, Kim, Craig.
If the truth about alcohol philosophy jives with you and you want to become someone that doesn't drink alcohol, then there are several options available to you, okay? According to the research carried out by Janice and James Prochaska, there are six stages of change when it comes to defeating an addiction. And let me assure you, that is your problem. It is an addiction, right? Now, these six stages of change are as follows. 1, pre-contemplation. 2, contemplation. 3, preparation. 4, action. 5, maintenance. And 6, termination. And translated into truth about alcohol philosophy, these categories become this, right? 1, the death effect. 2, visualization. 3, incubation. 4, ready, steady, go. 5, transformation. And 6, service. And that just makes a nice little acronym, STRIVE. Ha! That's why I did that, right? So these six stages of the truth about alcohol are not fixed in stone, right? They're fluid, and you'll move between these stages depending on a variety of different factors. But understanding where you are on this spectrum is really critical, okay? Now, 1, the first category you're going to be in, which the Prochaska's called pre-contemplation and I'm calling the death effect, that's when you really are struck by the zombification of societal conditioning. You have no idea that alcohol is a problem, that alcoholism exists. You just think that alcohol is fucking brilliant and that is the end of, right? And that will not be affecting you right now because you're here listening to this. But that is that first level, that first category, the death effect. At the second level, contemplation, as the Prochaskas call it, or for me, visualization, this is where you start to think and question the role that alcohol has in your life, right? And as you're thinking about this and you're pondering and you're kind of visualizing kind of like, you know, how alcohol is having a negative effect in your life and what it could possibly be like if it's not in your life anymore, you may have joined the Alcohol Addiction Podcast and listened to this. You may have headed over to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and joined our email list. You might be reading our blog post. You might have picked up a few books and started reading on those. At the third stage is called preparation, right? Or what we call incubation. And this is where you might go a little bit further. And you're now starting not only to kind of listen to podcasts and read some books, but you're actually preparing to change, right? The idea that you could potentially be someone that doesn't drink alcohol is starting to incubate. And you could, at this stage, have joined a community forum like Strive, or you might have joined NIST Naked Minds forum or Hip Sobriety's Facebook group or something. But you're starting to prepare for change. The fourth category is action, or what we call ready, steady, go. And this is where you really are now starting to take some real solid action. And if you're ready to take action, then you should take the Truth About Alcohol Taster. And the Truth About Alcohol Taster is a 27-day program. You can join the program whenever you like. You just go to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and you can find the links there to join up, or you can email me at thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com and I'll sort you out. You join basically a group, and you can just work on being someone who doesn't drink alcohol for 27 days to give it a little bit of a feel. We'll introduce you to the Truth About Alcohol philosophy, our three modules of truth, awareness, and freedom. We'll learn to help you see the truth about alcohol, why you drink, why it's so difficult to stop, raise awareness of that truth internally so you can start to change some of those neurological pathways, those thought process and belief systems around alcohol. And then freedom. How do you assert yourself back into a society of people that don't drink alcohol? You do the homework on Strive, you get an assignment every day from myself, and one of the Truth About Alcohol ambassadors will lead you along the way. So that's kind of the action stage. The fifth stage is called maintenance, or what we call transformation. This is where the work really takes off, right? Now, it's really important to understand that moving between the incubation phase and the ready, steady, go phase, you know, so whilst you're kind of like preparing to take action, that could take anywhere up to 6 months. And once you've started to take action, the actual maintenance phase, which is what we call transformation, the stage where you are really working on becoming someone that doesn't drink alcohol permanently, that phase can take up to 5 years, right? It can take that long. It certainly takes six months plus for you to really nail it or give yourself a good shot at this. And for that reason, we've created the intensive. The Truth About Alcohol Intensive, it's a year, an annual subscription where we get really deep into the truth about alcohol, raising awareness of that truth and working out how to be free of it. And we're up to like 70 plus coaching videos. You work with all the Truth About Alcohol ambassadors and myself. It's a great, great process, okay? One of the big mistakes people make is they'll take the taster, so they start to take action, and then once they finish the taster, they don't continue into the maintenance phase, and that can lead them fall back into some of those earlier categories. So it's really important to do the intensive and get through that transformation phase. And then finally, sixth, termination, as the Prochaskas call it, or I like to call it service. This is where it doesn't matter what happens now, you're never going to drink alcohol. It doesn't matter, you're never triggered, nothing ever happens, you're just fucking done with it, right? And that's where I am right now. And this is where we at the Truth About Alcohol can offer you some roles to, you know, give back to the community, give back to the world, and help me create this movement of a million people that don't drink alcohol. And that is to extend yourself into the roles of either a Strive ambassador, where you lead in the Strive movement and really are a rock helping new people come to Strive, or you can become a Truth About Alcohol ambassador, where we pay you to take control of the taster groups and the intensive groups and really work with people who are ready to take the action phase. So if you are ready right now, okay, to start to think about moving up into the next stage, so, you know, you're in contemplation phase now and you're thinking about going to preparation, join Strive, right? It's £5 a month. It'll be the best £5 you've ever spent. If you're ready to take action, if you're ready to do something about this, then join the taster. Okay, that's £99, right? Join the taster. And then if you are just ready to just fucking be someone that doesn't drink alcohol and that is like something you want to do permanently, then join the intensive. That is £1,000. We've got payment plans available. Do not let money be the reason why you do not take this, because we can always sort something out or find you some help, all right? So head over to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk to join those experiences, or give me an email at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com. Remember this, folks, okay? You drink alone, but you do not have to stop drinking alone. That's why we're here for you. So reach out and help. Take care of yourself.